Let me ask you something. What do you want to study tonight? What do you want to study? Okay, she wants to study the Bible. See now, all these guys knew not to say anything. Because the minute one of them answered, they knew I'd say, well, come on up and teach it. Okay, but I can't do that with you. Okay, well, we're going to study the Bible tonight. What is the Bible about? Can you sum it up with one word? Yeah, it has history. Redemption, salvation, coming of Christ. That's three words. No, that's all right. Okay. You're all right in the sense that that's in there. But the Bible is actually about God. That's what the Bible is about. Now, it has a theme. We commonly say the theme of the Bible is God's plan or scheme to redeem mankind from his sin. But it's about God. The Bible is not about what Bob is supposed to do in order to be saved. It does contain that, doesn't it? But that's not what it's about. It's about God. Would we know God if it weren't for the Bible? What would we know? Yeah, Psalm 19, the heavens are telling the glory of God. So I can look up and I can say, this was designed. And you know, the more science learns, the more science proves that. It's truly a great paradox when you look at science and the way that it goes out of its way to prove that there isn't a God, that everything happened about by happenstance. And you know, the further we're getting into this thing, the more they're figuring out how much they don't know. It's becoming more and more frequent for the scientific community to say, oops, we were wrong. The most recent really big thing, pardon the pun, the recent really big thing has been the Big Bang. We were wrong. Well, you were wrong. Okay, the Bible was right. What they do or they don't find is really beside the point. There is a God. He's shown himself in the design of creation. But we would not know who he is if it weren't for the Bible. He had to reveal himself to us for us to know his righteousness, to know the lengths that he has gone to in order to save us, in order to redeem us. And so what I want to do tonight is I want to try to supplement what John is going to be doing in this class each week as he goes through the 17 time periods. And so what I'm basically going to do is I'm going to go through the Old Testament. You know, I was asked several times today, what are you going to study on? And said, I don't know. And that was the truth. I don't know. I'm really not exactly sure where this is going to go. I kind of have a general idea. And to be honest with you, if one of you had said, I want to study Ephesians, we would have turned to Ephesians. We would have gone there. It's too late. It's too late, okay? And so let's just go back to where we left off in Genesis chapter 5 and what John was doing. Garrison wasn't here Sunday, but Garrison, John made a point of noting that Lamech died 5 years before the flood and Methuselah died the year of the flood. And so he and Garrison and I were talking last Wednesday night after class about whether Methuselah may have been wicked and died in the flood. Don't know. You know, that was Noah's grandfather, and you kind of like to think that, no, that wouldn't be it. I don't know. For all I know, he was lifting a beam up to build the ark, and he had a heart attack while he's lifting the beam. That's not important, is it? What is important is the fact that the Bible is this wonderful picture that we have, that it's just truth. Okay, now the interesting thing about this, what we have here is we have a representation of time moving from the time of creation all the way down to the time of the death of Abraham. And I bring this up just to note a few things. First of all, Methuselah does live until the time of the flood. Lamech dies 5 years before the flood. Noah, of course, lives after the flood. Shem, who is the important one, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But Shem is only noted here because... yeah, it's his descendants that we follow down to the coming of the Christ. And of course, that goes through Abraham. But I want you to notice here, I want you to notice that when we look at Abraham, it's really interesting that Abraham may very well have known Noah and Shem and Arphaxad and Salah. When we look at these people down here, we usually think of them as being, oh, well, they were hundreds of years after these other people lived, and that's not actually the case as represented in Genesis 5 and 10. When we look at these people right here, I want you to notice that the ages are dropping off very, very quickly. You ever thought about this? Other than Enoch, and we don't know how long he would have lived because he lived, the indication in Scripture is that his life was so exemplary. He walked with God, so God took him. The whole idea is that he was such that he was not going to see death because he was a righteous man. Who knows how long he would have lived? He may have lived to the year of the flood too. Don't know. But he's the only one who lives a short life here. And he might have lived a long life, but the point is, all of these people are living very long lives, and right here is where all of a sudden, boom, everything starts dropping off. Okay, so something happens in the flood. Just by reading the Bible without looking around at the world that is around us, we can say, okay, after the flood, something really, really changed. Because the ages very quickly drops down into the 200s and then into the 100s and then below 100. And so why is that? Well, creation scientists, they have a reason that they give. It's really beyond what we want to study in this class. But the point is, the flood did something to this world. Just like the fall in the very beginning, sin did something to this world. And in this case, it brought God's curse upon the ground, the man, the woman. And that curse, of course, exists to this day. And then, of course, we have the first murder that takes place, and we find the ground is cursed again. And then we wonder why we have trouble growing our vegetable gardens. Well, that's an old story. When we then look at all of this, I want us to understand that the Bible is looking at time as being something rather short. And for the next few minutes, what I'd like to do is I'd like for us to stop and think about how long ago all of this was. Because when we think about all of this right here, we have a tendency in our minds to, while we know that, okay, well, 6,000 years, but 6,000 years may as well be 6 million years in our minds, right? Because how long are you going to live? yeah, if I make it to 100, I mean, that's a fluke. I mean, my genes just going through my family tell me, okay, if everything goes well, I may make it to my early 80s and then I'm gone. Okay, well, what is that in the scheme of 6,000 years? And so we look at these people here, and we need to realize they are not really all that long ago. And that's what I want us to see. But before we look at that, let me point out something. What did you learn in school about the age of the earth? It's millions of years old. What did you learn in school about the age of the universe? Billions of years old. They move the thing around. I mean, educators, they don't feel like they're earning their living unless they move numbers and alphabets and not writing in script anymore and all that stuff. Just move it around so we can earn our money. But 20 billion years. 20 billion years. Okay, and how do they prove that? They prove that by shuffling numbers. They prove that by... you remember the shell game where you put a pea under a shell and you shuffle it around? That's basically what they do with the evidence that they use. We have radiometric dating. We have rock layers, which prove nothing, by the way. Rock layers prove nothing. Those kinds of things, they lead young people to believe, okay, this is all, when we talk about the earth, we're talking about, you know, the earth itself, 5 billion years. Okay, and then we start moving down into life, and we're moving into millions of years. And the problem here is that they cannot prove what they're saying, but they make their contentions and they couch it in scientific terms that sound reasonable. But if you get another scientist who will not fall in line with them and will expose them, he'll show you exactly where they're wrong. So let's talk about how long ago things actually were. And by the way, what we're shooting for is zero. Okay, so we're looking at, you know, just over 4,000 years here. And we're going to work our way down to zero. When was Jesus born? Well, you know, we think zero. You know, Anno Domini, A.D., that's in the year of our Lord, and that comes at zero. Actually, it looks a little more like 6 B.C., because let's face it, when the Gregorian calendar was created... they didn't exactly get everything just right. So let's go on and let's look at a few things here. We're going to move on up to Abraham. We have the covenant with Abraham. I want you to notice here that the city of Ur, what is the city of Ur known for? City of Ur. Ur of the Chaldees. Yeah, that's where Abraham was when God called him. So he was called out of Ur of the Chaldees. So we go right back here and we have him coming out of Ur of the Chaldees. But we come down here about 140, 150, 60 years later and the city of Ur falls. Roughly 2004 B.C., and Abraham would have been about, you know, toward the close of his life. He would have still been alive. He may have heard it, couldn't read it in the newspaper, but someone may have been passing through and spoke of the fall of the city of Ur. If you know anything about the ziggurats in Mesopotamia, they were the first of them were built during Abraham's time. Ziggurats, by the way, are what we think of as pyramids, but they're stepped. They have steps. So you've probably seen pictures of those. As we go on, we find that, of course, Abraham had a son named Isaac. Isaac married who? Rebecca. And then Isaac and Rebecca had Jacob and Esau. We only have Jacob on here because Jacob is, of course, the son of promise. And Jacob, who was he married to? Rachel and Leah. And, of course, their two handmaids came into focus there as they were a part of the propagation of the seed in order to get the 12 sons of Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and so that's why we have Israelites. Was Isaac an Israelite? You cannot be an Israelite before there are Israelites, and Jacob was the first Israelite. Okay, and so Abraham was not an Israelite. He was the father of Isaac and the grandfather of Israel. So Abraham was not an Israelite. Only descendants of Jacob were Israelites, and of course, those were the sons of Jacob. Someone was noting, I think it was Mary, she had come to the realization that two of the most important sons of Jacob, of course, two of the most important sons were who? You know one of them. Joseph. Well, yeah, Joseph was important, but Judah, when we're talking long term, we're looking at Judah, and Judah's important because the Messiah is going to come through him, and then the other would be Levi, because the priesthood was going to come through him. Joseph was, of course, important from the standpoint that he was going to save all of his brethren. And that was so essential and important. But their mother was, well, let me put it this way. Jacob's favorite wife was who? Rachel. He was in love with her, and you'll remember Laban made the switch, and he ended up with Leah. And so, who was the mother of these sons? It was not the one he wanted. It was the other. And we find that Rachel, the beloved wife, she, of course, bore, the two sons that would be the favorite of their father, right? And that would incite the jealousy. Garrison, you had something?
So I've heard this, but I've heard that the Great Pyramids were built by the Israelites when they were in captivity in Egypt. Do we have really any evidence to support that in any way?
No. And, the big building project that we historically look back into Egypt and we tend to see is going to be the pyramids and the Sphinx. And we think, oh, well, that was what the Israelites were building. But no, that was not what they were building. And the reason, there's a timing issue there. Even more important than that, when you look at the Bible record and you read Exodus chapters 1 and 2, what were the Israelites doing in bondage? They were making bricks. How many bricks are in a pyramid? It's stone. It's cut stone. Moved, over 100 miles down the Nile River. So what we think they were building was government buildings. But we really don't know for sure. And we think that from what we know about where they left out of when they began the Exodus and what archaeologists have found. So, okay? Okay, so you may have heard at some point in school about the law code of Hammurabi. The law code of Hammurabi is the oldest law code that we know of, that is written down and organized, and we call that codified. It's a codified law, and it happens right here, right after Joseph in Egypt. Okay? Oh, and let me point out the Hyksos begin their rule right here. The Hyksos. Why do we need to know about the Hyksos? Sounds like something you do when you eat too fast and involuntary spasm of the diaphragm and all that kind of stuff. Well, the Hyksos were actually a people from Mesopotamia. And who else was from Mesopotamia? Who was called out of Ur of the Chaldees? Abraham. That's where the Hyksos came from. Mesopotamia, by the way, it's the land between the rivers. So it's between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And so the Hyksos, they actually came down and they infiltrated Egypt and they conquered it from within. It had been a major world power. But then the Hyksos came along and they began to rule in Egypt. The interesting thing is that they rule until the Egyptians take the country back over again. And when they take the country back over again, what happens? The Israelites end up in slavery too. This is kind of the backstory of history that the Bible really doesn't have to tell us about. But when we look into history, we find some things going on that tell us that, okay, no wonder Pharaoh was so afraid of the Israelites, because the Israelites were Mesopotamian in their background, and they probably looked at them just exactly the same way as they looked at these people. And big changes were happening in the world as well. The Hittites, which ruled in Turkey, major civilization, they actually sacked Babylon. By the way, the Hittites never existed before 1901. Before 1901, you could go to any university and they would tell you that the Hittites were made up by Bible writers and that they never actually existed nowhere in this world. In 1901, they found them. They found them, and what they were was they were a major civilization covering most of Asia Minor, which is modern Turkey, and they discovered that they had trade routes. They were a formidable power. They actually had a law treaty with Egypt, a treaty between them and Egypt that predated the Israelites at Mount Sinai. And you know, today you can go to the University of Pennsylvania and you can get a PhD in Hittite civilization. Okay? So, never say never. Okay, so you've probably heard about a few of these names down here. We've got some pharaohs. Something to understand about this is we're dating the time of the Exodus. We're not 100% sure of where it is. 1446 is the date right here. We can come down to a low date. That's the high date. The low date is 1290. And it depends on where you put that as to who was on the throne in Egypt. People get hung up on that. They say, well, I think it was. Well, I think it. And it's just like the Red Sea crossing. They'll say, everybody's wrong about where the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. They went over the Sinai Peninsula, and it was not the Gulf of Suez. It was over here on the other leg of the Red Sea, and they crossed over there. And they'll have a big fight about it. I'm going to tell you what. Settle down. If you believe they crossed, they crossed. Leave it alone. Unless you need to follow them. If you need to follow them, I guess go ahead. But there's a lot of stuff in Scripture that it's just not worth arguing about. The date of the Exodus, where the Israelites crossed, where Mount Sinai is, it's just really not that important. Let me point out a few things here. We have some stuff going on during the time of the judges. Of course, we know about Ruth. But then we have dynasties in China that have been firing up. The Shang dynasty is interesting. We have some very important pharaohs that are in here. Recognize him? King Tut. King Tut. King Tut came along about the time of the judges. That's where King Tut was. You know, when you think about King Tut, you think, oh yeah, well he was way back there. He was before the Israelites were in Egypt. Well, actually, King Tut was after the Israelites, depending on the date that you take for the Exodus. But he was right there in them. King Tut knew about Israelites. Okay, so Amenhotep, Ramses second and first, probably recognize them. We have, during this period of time, 12... By the way, don't pay any attention to the numbers down here. They did not scale out right when I put this on my PowerPoint slides. The Meronepta stele, it talks about Israel. 1237 to 1227 is what this is dated to. This is a stone with carvings in it. And this stela, it gives historical details about the actions of Pharaoh. Particular Ramses the second. And on the stela, we have mention of Israel. The mention of Israel. This is important because there are people, historians, atheistic historians, who will tell you that David made all of this stuff up back here. And some will even tell you that David never existed. And that Israel didn't exist until after the time of David, and it was all invented and looking back. Okay, here's the Egyptians, and they're telling you about Israel. I guess they made it up too. We have the collapse of the Hittite Empire, and the Iron Age actually beginning. We're still in the time of the judges. You remember Eli. He comes along at the end of the judges, and we would have Samuel right here. We have Assyria. Tiglath-Pileser is ruling in Assyria. Notice the Trojan War begins. Do you study anything about that in high school? The Trojan War. Well, just think about it. It took place during the time of the judges. It wasn't something that was, oh yeah, that wasn't that long ago. It's way back there. And it dates to 1190 B.C. We find a decline in power. And of course, Assyria is ramping up its power. We find that the kingdom is consolidated under kings. And we have what we call the United Kingdom. But we find Mayan, during the time of King David, Mayan dynasties were founded about the time that David was sitting on the throne, 1000 B.C. You think about the Mayans, you never imagine where they might fit in with Bible history. But there they are at the time of David. Moving on, we have the division of the kingdom. And we find a lot of kings and a lot of prophets that we recognize here. Just moving on a little bit, we have Jonah. prophesying right here, and this is important for what's going to happen after that. But notice right here, during the reign of Uzziah, co-regency of Amaziah and Uzziah, we have the first recorded Olympic Games in 776 BC. Bible times. Okay? We also have the traditional date for the founding of Rome at 753, and Isaiah and Hosea are prophesying to the children of Israel. We have these kings in the Assyrian empire who are currently reigning, but remember who Jonah went and prophesied to. He prophesied to Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria, and of course, they repented in sackcloth and ashes, and we find, well, I'm not even, we're close to zero. And we find, you're not surprised, though, are you? And they repented. Okay, well, the interesting thing is that as we go down through time, we find that they are actually going to conquer Israel, the northern kingdom. I guess I passed. 722. Okay, it's right here. And, oh, right here. Okay. Told you not to use those numbers. And so, 722, Israel falls to the Assyrians. Jonah went, prophesied to them. They were saved because they repented. Do you think God knew that this was going to happen? But he still cared about people who didn't know their right hand from their left, didn't he? That's a lesson for us. Let's move along somewhat quickly here. We've got the fall of Judah, and so we go into captivity right here. Want you to notice that we have Buddha, the tradition of Buddha. We don't know who Buddha was, but the tradition of Buddha comes about right here. It's interesting that he's dated before the end of Daniel's work in Babylon, because, and the reason why that is interesting is because in the tradition of Buddha, he did travel extensively trying to learn the secrets, the truths of the universe, and it is strongly believed by those who have read ancient Chinese and Indian texts that he knew about the Messiah coming and when he would come. So I don't have time to go into that. But anyway, we've got Confucius, the Chinese philosopher. We have the Peloponnesian War, if you're up on your Greek history. And of course, it's during the time of the exile. We find Alexander the Great. He conquers Egypt and Palestine. We find that the Hellenization, the Greek education of the world, begins. The First Punic War, the Second Punic War, and then we get into the period where there are a lot of people that we know from Josephus and what he records, among the Jews. And these are Jewish peoples who fought against the Greeks. By the way, the Rosetta Stone. Anybody know what the Rosetta Stone was? Besides a program that you can get on a computer to learn other languages. What was the Rosetta Stone? Anybody know? In 196 BC, there was a... what's the word that I want to use? There was a decree. There was a decree that was made, and the decree was actually written in three languages. Two of these languages were Egyptian. There were hieroglyphics. There was a more of a script form of Egyptian, and then there was Greek. You can see the Greeks are really wordy. This was important because up until the Rosetta Stone was found, no one could read those hieroglyphics. But these all three say the same thing. And the Greek became the key to figuring out what the hieroglyphs meant. And so that's what the Rosetta Stone was. Okay, so I'm out of time. Any questions? I've been doing nearly all the talking. Okay, the point of all of this is it gets us down to zero, so to speak. And we get to that time where God sends his son into the world. And it's only been a little over 4,000 years that this has been going on. A little over 4,000 years. That's a long time, isn't it? But what I want us to see is it's not millions of years. And there were a lot of other things happening in the world that you know about from high school or college history classes. Things that you've heard about, documentaries that you've watched on the History Channel and such as that. And these things all fit within that framework. But more accurately, those things that you hear in those contexts, they actually all fit into the framework of the Bible. And it's what God put together to bring his son into the world. Well, I hope that in some way kind of enhances what John is going to be doing. That was kind of the idea in the back of my mind as I did it. And I hope it's helped you kind of put things together in your mind as well.